This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 22nd of April, 1959. The title of this lecture is Assessment. This tape is 56 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Thank you. Want to give you a talk now on assessment. It may be in your mind when you first confront your first raving hydrophobic homo sap that I have omitted something in these lectures, because obviously something else is wrong with this man. Now, our creature in this particular event is simply other determined. And he's being other determined by something of great significance and particularity, which gives us an apparent case type. Follow that? It's what's determining this fellow and its characteristics that make him behave in the fashion he is behaving in. And that's it. The thing you must keep your eye on, in spite of the vast, all-absorbing interest of these particularities that's causing him to be hydrophobic, is the fact that it's other determined. The degree that it is other determined is established by the affinity, the communication, the reality of the PC. Now, if this fellow, as he jumps around and frawls at the mouth, keeps telling us that the place is full of Bengal tigers, we have connected at once with an unreality. From our point of view, at least, we certainly don't share this. We look all around and we don't even see a pelt. But he tells us that the place is full of Bengal tigers. All right, that's his reality. But complacently, that doesn't mean that it is a desirable reality. Just because it's his reality doesn't mean it's desirable. Nor does it mean that this individual is safe to have around. Nor does it mean that it's an optimum solution just to go along with holy acceptance of everything that we see and say it's all for the best and it's best of all possible worlds to have this individual around and things and everything's full of Bengal tigers. First mistake you could make, you see, is not realize that this person's reality is a room full of Bengal tigers. See, we have to just recognize that. Now, the mistake that is commonly made is the individual says, well, all right, it's his reality, and he's entitled to it. Now, why does this individual says, well, that's his reality, and he's entitled to it, why does this individual have such an attitude? That's an interesting one, too, you see. That is just a total individuation from the other fellow's privacy. That's a declaration on the part of the observer that he has no share in life. See, he's just an observer. And you'll very often find this attitude, and it's most startling. It's an old truism that a person who is batty is usually surrounded to some degree by batty people. You go into a family to process Aunt Zed, and you find out that she may be strictly fruitcake, but the people who are demanding that she be straightened out are the last people in the world to assist you to straighten her out. And after you've been hard at work straightening out Aunt Zed, why, they get much harder at work in unison to unstraighten her. You get the idea? You're just getting not only not cooperation, but you're getting resistance. Because actually, it tends to be a psycho environment. And this person is inhabiting this psycho-environment. What you're looking at, then, is an environment of very poor reality anyway. Now, to say that you have no share in this, or to say you have no responsibility for it, or to say that it doesn't influence you in any way, and so forth, is simply taking an extreme view of isolationism, an extreme view of detachment. Irresponsibility is the underscored word which matches up such an attitude. Inability to observe is the phrase that describes the first symptom. You just can't believe that this individual thinks the room is full of Bengal tigers. That's just an inability to observe, that's all. It isn't necessary that you see the Bengal tigers, but it's sure necessary to observe that this individual believes they're there. Don't go around saying, well, it's impossible that the room is full of Bengal tigers, so therefore it's utterly impossible that this individual thinks so. Don't go protesting against that. He thinks so. Don't say, well, the reality is so outrageous that nobody can accept it, nobody could believe it, nobody could have anything to do with it, and therefore it doesn't exist. Because that way, you wind a cropper every time as an auditor. You must realize that this character thinks the room is full of Bengal tigers. See, that's your observation. Well, it's not going to kill you to observe it. It's quite the contrary. You only get into trouble as an auditor when you never observe this. This individual's busy crawling walls and diving through skylights and fighting windmills of one character or another. And you say, well, it's not real. None of these things are motivated, so therefore he isn't doing these things. You know, we just won't observe that. And actually what's necessary here is that we do something else here. Let's see now, the best thing to do. I wonder what would keep him quiet. you get the idea? This is just the wrong attitude. Look at him, realize that this is what he's doing. This is what he believes. Now we're in a position to do something about it. Now, obsessively, it is not absolutely vital and necessary that you do something about everything that you see. Otherwise, you would be too busy and you wouldn't get very much done. But if you're supposed to do something about this, and you're the person that's going to do something about it, then for heaven's sakes, do something about it, you see. To take a detached attitude, however, toward all people alive and say, well, that's just that's the way life is, and that's just an irresponsibility. Now, an obsessive responsibility, whereby you've got to go around and smash out all these bad ideas, and you've got to all do it at once, and you've got to fight these ideas at once, is almost as batty as not fighting them at all. There is a scale, you might say, between irresponsibility, bad, total responsibility, bad. Somewhere in the middle ground, where there's a responsibility and an irresponsibility sort of mixed up. You get the idea? That is a fairly decent attitude. Once in a blue moon, why, you watch somebody dive off a building and go splat on the sidewalk, and if you get a feeling of guilt at that moment, why, you better find one of your fellow auditors. You had nothing to do with it, you didn't even know the fellow, and yet you felt guilty because he dived off the top of a building. Get the idea? Well, that's obsessive responsibility, and you'll find psychos go between these two poles. Obsessive irresponsibility, you know, doesn't have anything to do with me, I can't do anything about it, I mustn't do anything about it, and so forth, and so on, and then explain, how I never had any part in it. These people sit around day and night, tell you how they never had any part in it, and they didn't have anything to do with it, and there's no responsibility for theirs, and they were not causative in any way or shape or form or degree in their whole life, and they just never did anything to anybody. You get the idea? Well, be prepared to see the exact opposite pole as obsessive, almost at the same point of the tone scale, because they're not a half a millimeter apart. They flip from total irresponsibility to total responsibility on something. And you get one of the wildest manifestations you ever saw. Batty, utterly batty, of an individual telling you how he's responsible. This is a wild one.
this individual tells you, well, he's responsible for this and he's responsible for that and he was responsible for something else and he was responsible for something else. And today he caused 1,862 auto accidents, you know, and he was the fellow who did this and the fellow who did that and so on. You see, it's not real. He wasn't doing any of these things. Just as it isn't true that a person never had any share in or responsibility for his experiences. They're equally untrue. You find this second psychosis most commonly in somebody who isn't very well off anyway, who loses an ally or a person who's very closely connected with them, on whom they have depended a great deal, but who has actually been villainous toward them. Ally. That's a special term. Ally is the gentle tyrant without which the person cannot do. And we find this ally's death is succeeded by the person whose ally has died sitting around worrying and thinking and trying to figure out how they killed the ally. See, the ally died in the Tasman Sea while this person was in Canada, and they hadn't even been in communication for years, and this person will just sit around and figure, was, well, somehow or other, there's some connected certain, and just how did they manage to kill this ally? Got the idea? They had nothing to do with it at all. Freudians were very fascinated with this gimmick. It's hardly more than just a mental manifestation of not terrific importance, except maybe to assess somebody. People who are obsessively responsible for things they had nothing whatsoever to do with label themselves to some degree, don't you see? And as an individual runs into these people, he's not being presented with anything more than a view of something that's a trifle unhinged. Now, as all insanities are mockeries of abilities, you may run into a Theta Clear who is influencing things to some degree and who does say that he caused something. He did. Got the idea? He did. And it doesn't appear to be very sequitur. You know, he wasn't there. That is to say, his body wasn't on the scene. And he did something. Get the idea? Well, he really did something. You see? But he isn't telling you and bragging how he is totally responsible for it. This is one of the factors. He possibly mentions it in passing, or it seems to be amusing to him, or he injects it into a communication that is relevant to what was being talked about. You follow that. Now, therefore, the ability to observe the condition and the ability to take as much responsibility for the condition as is necessary to resolve the case is what is demanded of the auditor. That's what's demanded of the auditor, to observe the condition, which we call obnosis, and to take enough responsibility for the case to resolve the condition. That's all. That's all that's required. Now, because the PC's reality is not the same as your reality, is no criteria. That is not a point of criticalness. That's not a point of diagnosis. As the individual sits in the chair and runs through an engram, which has to do with all the aristocrats being hanged in the French Revolution, and your reality is that they were all beheaded, truth of the matter is, your reality might be as bad off as his reality. He happened to be in a part of France where they simply hanged them, and nobody could afford a tumbril, you know, and a guillotine. And the widow just didn't get imported to that part of France, so they hung all the aristocrats, don't you see? You can get into trouble as somebody is running a case criticizing their reality. But at the same time, this should alert you that he might be running something that a little bit later he is going to run quite another way. See, it might alert you to the fact that it might be a fact, you see, that that is the historical significance, and it's different than the textbook. Textbooks aren't all that good. But the other part of the thing is that he may be running something he can't quite confront, so he's in that particular circumstance or in that particular incident or position in time, his reality was pretty bad. And he's running through a sequence which isn't his average reality at all. It's not his present time reality, but he's running a dub-in. And as you run through this dub-in, you can expect changes to occur. As an individual confronts things that are, changes occur. Well, similarly, while he's running an engram or an incident, changes occur. Well, you could make a terrible mistake at this point. You could say, I can't possibly permit this fellow to change, because the first time he came up with this, he said his mother beat him every day of his life, beat him with a cast iron club, and never failed, and he's now busy telling me that never in his life did his mother ever lay a hand on him. What's this? You know? Well, what's this is just a symptom of reality. That's all. It's symptomatic. That's all. He doesn't know what his mother did. Get the idea? One minute, why, she's the archdemon. The next moment, ah, mother, mother, how cruel I was to you, mother. Well, I'll let you in on something. Most mothers are women. And women are, they act like women. And sometimes they are sweet, and sometimes they are mean, and they are not necessarily the goddess of divine love throughout the entirety of their child's progress through the early years, nor, on the other hand, they're not Messalina either. You get the idea? But the PC's reality at the moment he observes the reality is what you see as his reality. That is his reality. To acquire the trick of being able to observe a reality that is not your reality, and merely observe it as that reality, and then take the proper amount of responsibility to adjust it, is a very interesting discipline, and one that a lot of auditors fall from grace on. You'll see some auditor sitting there listening to this engram runoff, listening to it, listening to it, listening to it. Then the guy goes through the engram again, you know, the PC runs through the engram again, and the auditor listens to it, and he says, well, wait a minute. Wait a minute, he says to himself. The first time he went through that engram, it was something other way, and now it's this way, and so on. And besides, I know very, very clearly that it was not George III that gave the grounds to the people, it was King William. And the auditor is so carried away that he says, he doesn't wait for this thing to unravel. So the PC finally gets himself oriented in time. No, he's got to jump in and correct this reality before the PC can correct the reality. See? And he says, are you sure that wasn't King William? The PC says, huh? Huh? What? 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 What do you mean? Well, wasn't it King William that gave his grounds to the people? Oh, I don't know. Maybe it was. Maybe what have you done? Look, you're trying to get the guy to recover from other determinism, aren't you? You're trying to get him to recover from other determinism. And at that point, you inject a whole big snootful of other determinism. Look, that's what's wrong with the thing. The period, the incident, is so other determined that the individual can't even confront it. It's just a chimera, it's a delusion, it's a hallucination. Lord knows what's going on. But, so help me, it's changing. And that's what you want. Change, not accuracy. You're not there making sure that history is repeated on this fellow's track the way history should be. You're there to make sure that the individual's ability to confront history changes. Well, don't be surprised if history changes in process. Now, the common auditor error is to repress change because of incredulity, and it's just these first two laws that I gave you there. One, you've got to look at the person's reality, observe it, see it for what it is. That is his reality, you see. And then two, take enough responsibility for it to change it up to a better confronted reality, you see? Those are the two things you're supposed to do, so anything else that is introduced over on the top of this simply defeats the whole purpose of auditing. As Nietzsche, please. All right. To assess a case, then, it is necessary to find a terminal in the case that the individual has some reality on. But that's his reality. He has some reality. He has on this terminal. And that if run will change the other determinism factor of the case. Therefore, you say everybody who did anything for the PC is therefore somebody who caved the PC in. No, that's an aberration too. You're looking for somebody who's been bad cause and has overwhumped the PC. You're looking for bad cause. And when you're looking for bad cause, you're looking for physical duress. You're looking for something that's pretty tense. Now, when you assess a case, you're looking for the other determinisms, which, if relieved, will permit self-determinism to occur. Definition, technical. When you're assessing a case, you're looking for other determinism, which, if relieved, will permit self-determinism. You see this? All right, mistake number one. First mistake. Pick up all the pro-survival valences of the PC and run them out. Leaving the PC sitting with nothing but bad valences. Why do you think he picked up a pro-survival valence? It's to counterbalance some valence which is caving him in. A funny part of it is, removing any valence or removing any other determinism could be expected to bring about some gain. Could be expected to, but not when it's the last pair of crutches. Now, you and I know that crutches are not going to do anything but make a person more dependent in walking. The individual should seek to walk without crutches, right? So therefore, let's walk up to every lame man or every person who's had his legs amputated or something like that and violently grab the crutches, yank them away from him, and burn them up. Now, what's going to happen? Somebody's going to fall down. And that's just what happens when you pick up the pro-survival crutches off the case. He falls down. There's some very amusing anecdotes that can be told along this line. It won't occupy your time. But one of them I well remember was a girl. Absolutely was certain that it was mother. This was an old research case. Absolutely certain that it was mother that had done this girl in. So they ran mother out totally on old valence processes. Got rid of the old girl utterly. And the PC curled up in a ball. Prenatal position, but they just got through running out mother, and mother no longer dropped on an E-meter. But here was the PC in a ball in a prenatal position. All curled up in a ball of other determinism. Ha! Father, up to this time, had been described by the PC as all sweetness and light, and the person who really gave the PC a hand. And mother had been described as the arch vicious villain. And just on the surface of it, obviously, it was mother. But when mother was audited out, the PC got worse. What were the facts of the case? The facts of the case were that while curled up in the back end of a car, driven by father, who got dead drunk, there was a great big automobile accident. A smasher. A beauty. And mother was quite peeved, and that was where the PC was stuck. It was stuck in an incident. You get the idea? Here was an incident. And the incident was just totally misread clear across the boards. Ran out vehicles and automobiles and a few things like that, and the incident straightened right on up and looked good. You get the idea? But here the PC was busy giving evaluation. And the auditor really didn't take any responsibility for the evaluation at all, merely took the PC's evaluation. What kind of a reality was this? No, there is nothing rational about a person who is irrational, including his evaluation of his own case. Every time you buy one of those things, stand by for trouble. Now, it's slightly different with a Scientologist who knows his business, been auditing a lot of people, and has maybe been audited a bit on something or other, and has seen what it is, and it hasn't been finished off. He says, this is what's wrong. Well, if we never look at cases, we say, well, this Scientologist, who's in pretty good shape, is thinking the same way as a non-Scientologist who is crazy as a mouse. You see? And therefore, we can't accept this Scientologist's assessment of case or what he knows happened on the track. We've got to treat it the same as we would treat a psycho's assessment of the case. You get the idea. So we've violated one of these basic rules that I've given you. We haven't looked at the reality of the situation. The individual has been audited on this somewhat. He has looked at his track. He does recognize what the factors are. Well, that's no reason to slam him in the teeth every time he says, I think it's pop. He's had enough of a look at it. But that is also no reason to run pop. You see? You are the auditor. You've got to take enough responsibility for the case to resolve it. Well, what about this? Assessment. We're looking basically for bad cause, which means cause calculated to undermine the self-determinism, independence, good health, and continued survival of the PC. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for bad cause. And we'll find at that time, as we assess this thing, that as we pick up the individual necessary to resolve the case in this lifetime, to enter the case with overt withhold straight wire or some such process calculated to get somebody's reality up and get them at cause point and so forth, when we go into the case, this is going to show up variously on an E-meter, but it's certainly going to show up differently. Now, I had Nod to the other day tell me something very amusing. It was amusing to me. It wasn't amusing to him. He had observed this mechanism directly, had looked at square in the teeth, and had turned around and walked off. He said, it's the most remarkable thing. We keep processing this fellow and keep processing this fellow and keep processing this fellow on this person, that person he's known, and so forth. And we still don't get rid of a funny manifestation. What manifestation is that, says I? Well, all I do is say the word priestess, and he goes instantly to female Claire. E-meter reads instantly a female Claire every time we say priestess. Well, we audit his father, and we audit teachers, and we audit anybody and everybody that we can find on the whole case, and everything's gone along fine. He's just getting lots better, you know. But all we got to do is say, priest, if you go to female clear. I thought that was very amusing, and I thought you would be interested in it. The person's finishing up his intensive very shortly. Look. What makes the E-meter read somebody else? Very obvious to you, isn't it? Priestess. Holy cats, priestess. Look, it turns so other determined that the E-meter reads priestess, doesn't read pre-clear. Man, when you can find one that reads pop, or when you can find one that reads Rover the dog, and doesn't read the PC, you've got it. Now you're going to ask me, well, now what question do you ask the person to get him to get the exact answer, which gives you the total thing, and so forth? Well, I'll tell you what question I ask you. How much responsibility are you willing to assume for the case, and how much lookingness are you going to do? There is no trick question, because any trick question that you ask is simply a patch-up for an understanding. It's just a substitute for an understanding. Now, naturally, you could have... We were just discussing this short time ago. There's, as we come upscale from a long way down on the emotional scale, we get shame, then we get blame, then we get regret, and then we get failure, right? Well, possibly down below failure is pity. But how far below? I don't know. I don't know what point it is because I haven't studied it at this instant. But certainly somewhere below that's forget. Forget is long there. But forget on what dynamic? Now, you got your dwindling scale of inverting dynamics. That's forget on dynamics. Individuation from the various dynamics. Forgettingness is cutting in to the case. He's more and more blocking out, obliterating, excluding from his view, and occluding this individuality and so forth. Until he finally gets to himself, and he obliterates himself and substitutes somebody else. Man, that's the one we want. That's the one we want. We're going to look right down our air gun sights or our 16-inch atomic warhead shell sights, and we're going to let him have it right in the eye. That's the one we want. Why? It's other determinism, isn't it? We're going to have to establish some self-determinism on the points of other determinism before we're going to get this PC anyplace. Right? So don't come around and ask me for a trick question. There are many trick questions, and all of them land you top scale. They land you above the person you want, but they are very workable. You say, is there anybody in your life you could be ashamed of? Oh, yes, the individual said, I'm very ashamed of him. Well, very ashamed. I'm very ashamed of my Sunday school teacher. Good, run it. You'll get someplace. You're already entered on the emotional scale, so you will increase it. Of course, won't you? Now, who do you blame? Who do you blame most for your difficulties in life? Look where that is on the tone scale. A person will give you somebody. Run it. You'll get some gain. It's all perfectly all right. Now we could ask another trick question. Is there anybody you regret having known? Oh, the individual come up with somebody. Run him. You get someplace. Perfectly all right to run. Whom do you consider most caused you to fail? Oh, he says, that caused me to fail. Run him. You'll get someplace. But I'll let you in on something. These are high-scale characters. For the people you really want to knock the stuffings out of every case. If you take those, you will miss on at least 4 out of 20 cases. Because one of those 4, 2 of those 4, 3 of those 4, and 4 of those 4 will all lie below shame. They will all lie below that, well below that. Most of these cases, when dug for, lie below pity and lie below forget. You are sitting right there in the auditing room asking the person you are trying to run out what to run out of the PC in every roughed up case. It isn't something back on the track. The engram you are looking for to resolve the case is not back on the track. It is sitting right in the PC chair. There it is. That is the engram necessary to resolve the case, right before your eyes. And the person that you must run out of the case on overt with whole straight wire is sitting in the auditing chair, informing on the PC in about 80-90% of the cases you will audit. Spooky, huh? Fascinating, isn't it? Now, this is not a universal panacea, because it is above, it's a cut above many of these cases. There are faster ways to go about it. But this is always a slow grind one, and we'll get some of these low percentiles. It'll better your percentage. There is one valence description that you can use for all cases. Yourself. But because it's a lie, it doesn't quite work all the time, and it isn't totally smooth. In overt withhold straight wire, if you simply used, instead of a person, yourself, you would start hitting pretty well. You would get quite a ways. And it's something that you, every once in a while, will have to use and won't be able to use anything else then. The hidden person is so abstruse, which is to say, self is so buried, that you just use yourself and the individual eventually does a flip. But you're depending on an accidental flip. See, this is not a perfect answer. You understand? But it is an answer of sorts. It's a better answer than most. Why is it not a perfect answer? Well, let's ask Judas what he really thought about Jesus, to go into Christianity and parlance of that character. Get the idea? The person you're trying to run out is Judas, and you're trying to salvage Jesus, see? But what you've really got in the auditing chair is Judas. So we ask, you see, that's as far as the valence is concerned. The artificial valence, let us say, is Judas. The one you're trying to rescue is Jesus. Here is Judas sitting right in front of the auditor. And the auditor says, now, who would you have to get rid of to resolve the case? But the PC, the Thetan, you see, is Christ. See? So, naturally, Judas is going to run out Christ. Get how backwards this thing is? So you're going to get a circuit making nothing out of the Thetan instead of the Thetan making nothing out of the circuit. Well, this thing can backfire, can it? And if you said yourself, 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 you're depending on the accidentalness of the Thetan finally coming into view and so forth, and it all happens because it's all written in the ancient Quran or something of the sort. Get the idea? Just you're depending on an accidental. No, it'd be much smarter. It'd be much smarter to locate the bad cause to the PC much more succinctly and directly. And that is located on an E-meter by carefully watching the behavior of an E-meter. And this is the best way I can tell you to do it. That valence which causes the E-meter to behave differently than all other valences is the valence you want. That doesn't mean drop, it doesn't mean stick, it doesn't mean theta bop, you get the idea. It just behave differently. And you won't miss. There is a case known as the stage 4 case on an E-meter, whereby the needle just goes up and sticks and then falls, and goes up and sticks and then falls. You say, did you murder your grandmother? And he says, yes, and the needle goes up and sticks and falls. And you say, well, what is your explanation for your inability to explain this situation? And he says, well, actually, it's because I fell off a stepladder last year and I lost my memory. And the E-meter goes up and sticks and falls. You kick him in the shins and the E-meter goes up and sticks and falls. No matter what you do, that's a stage 4 needle. It's a technical term. And you can just bat your brains out if you're using your brains, which you shouldn't be, trying to get something on this meter. Well, the one thing that'll register on the meter and break up the process of stage 4, if you can find the other determined valence, which is sitting right in the chair in front of you, the E-meter will register differently. It's too much on the button. The actual existence of that artificial valence of bad cause is too tenuous. It's too easily broken up. It actually is the easiest thing on the whole case to attack if you could just find out what it was. Get the idea? I don't know how anybody stays insane. But that's from an experience, many experiences, being able to punch the button that caused them to be insane, and the exact button punched. The exact mechanism tripped on the case, and they say, da-da-da-da-da. They couldn't make it and put it back together again before it was gone, you see. This individual's wheezing with asthma. He hit the exact reason he's wheezing with asthma, and bang, he said, well, that's much better. I don't see, you notice them all trying to do this when you cost them something suddenly. They try to get it back, you know. They have no choice but to go on breathing normally. Very disappointing. Now, you can understand a lot about cases, understand a tremendous amount about cases, if you understand that the mechanism of self-invalidation is mixed up with every computation. Because the bad cause valence, which is dominant on the case, is seeking to make nothing out of the individual. The thetan, you see. But the thetan is actually fighting for some type of determinism or control over a bad cause factor. And you've got a fight consisting of at least two terminals, one synthetic and one live. Thetan's live, the other synthetic. It's being created by the thetan. Yeah, but he doesn't know why he's creating. The reason he's busy creating it is very simple. That's because he doesn't know he's creating. Because he's not taking any responsibility for what he's doing with regard to this. So, of course, he started creating, and now he takes no responsibility for creating. So, therefore, he still keeps on creating. Anyway, you want to go into this mad rat race. It was just why thetan victimizes himself. It's one of the most disheartening, amusing, tragic, sorrowful studies that you ever engaged in. When you start looking at this exact mechanism, and you realize how idiotic the mechanism is and how difficult it must be to hold in suspension the exact character that'll kick his head off, you say, boy, that takes some doing. But there is a war, and there's no such thing as self-invalidation. We use it, but use it carelessly. It's invalidation by a bad cause valence, who is apparently self. So the PC starts to get well, and suddenly a little circuit cuts in and says, you're a dog, and you're very sick. And he says, that's right, I'm a dog, I'm very sick. See? In other words, he starts to get better, and something makes him worse. Well, remember, something that makes him worse. But what might have started to get better? The bad cause valence might have started to get better. Ever stop to think of that? That you might improve the living daylights out of a bad cause valence? Well, the only way you can actually do it is to be yourself in the auditing chair, very bad cause. And then you reinforce the valence. All of these breaks, every auditor code break, simply reinforces the bad valence. You understand? So it gives the PC the idea of being overwhelmed. What is basically the reactive bank? The reactive bank is the other determinism which has overwhelmed the preclear. That's all a reactive bank is. That's a very fast statement, but a very accurate one. Now, you have to get the PC back to cause over this valence. And in order to do that, you have to find the valence and then take enough responsibility yourself to persevere and continue on until you remedy it. Hence, the difficulties of assessment. You're trying to find out what to look at so that you will know what's real to the PC. He doesn't know what's real. He's lost in some kind of a fog, so therefore he has a foggy notion of something unreal, and he says this is reality to him. And he's in an awful tangle about the situation. But let's look back at this. It's the change of reading of a meter, or change of demeanor or communication of the preclear, or both, that finds the exact valence necessary to resolve the case. Now, if you remember that pro-survival valences seldom overwhelm, but are accepted madly, hungrily, by the PC in order to overwhelm the contra-survival valence that he is stuck with. Thus you find the fellow's been a soldier. He was a very bad actor on the battlefield. Usually after a battle, why he went across the battlefield and carefully disemboweled all of the wounded or something like that, you know. And, well, why does a man do that? Well, he's himself been overwhelmed by such a valence so often, now he dramatizes this valence. He can't talk to a woman, he's got to kill her. You see, he's just a thief and a murderer. You get the idea? Hey, this is the valence. This individual's packing this around. He doesn't know what he's doing, and he's all going wog-wog. No reason to feel sorry for him, but certainly that is his state. He is overwhelmed by a bad valence, and he's dramatizing to such a degree he can't do anything else, because everything is overdetermined. You see, this bad cause just overdetermines any decent action he has. It's just immediately overwhelmed, and the wounded are killed, and the women are shot, and, you know, that sort of thing's going on all the time. All right, this individual goes staggering along with this walked-up valence that is determining all of his ways and means, and he finally runs into a holy man, and the holy man says, well, now what you should do is diet and live in a cave and so forth. You get the idea? And the fellow says, boy, I'm so far off the groove that I better get hep, and he suddenly becomes a holy man. It's you never fail to find some kind of a cycle of this character. If you just read one life at a time of man, you don't find these complete cycles, except in rare cases. There's the case of the great writer Dostoevsky. And he damned Christianity, and he damned Christianity, and he damned the church. And he was having a wild old time in his youth, and he was cutting everything to ribbons and chopping it all up, and finally, we find him dying amidst recently written novels which praise Christianity, and we find him seeking for some kind of benediction from the church and all of this kind of thing. You know, he's totally mishmashed on it. He fought it and so forth, and he eventually adopted some sort of a valence which overcame a valence. Now, he was already dealing on other determinism. You see, the only way this happens is the individual is already dealing with other determinism, and then he picks up another other determinism of a better sort, almost on his own volition, to overwhelm the determinism which is victimizing him. Now, you come along, you pick up the pro-survival determinism. It doesn't register very much, by the way. It doesn't register well, like bad cause will. But you pick this one off, and you leave the bad cause sitting there, and the fellow gets sick. Get the idea? What you want to do is take the bad cause out, and that'll blow all these other pro-survival and the need for. That'll blow the works. You can conduct numerous tests on this if you want to, and you'll come to the same conclusion that a pro-survival valence, some valence that the individual has adopted to help himself survive, if audited out, brings about a deterioration of the case or an unhappiness on the part of the person. But a contra-survival valence, one which has inhibited the survival of the individual, if audited out, boosts him up into a condition where he doesn't any longer have to have a pro-survival crutch. You got the idea? In other words, you got to use some judgment along this line. You will find that there's no substitute for judgment in any of these actions. Now, the comedy is that in assessment, you're trying to find the most obvious characteristics which are underlying the social characteristics of the PC, and that's right in front of you, and it's sitting right in the chair in front of you, and it's the easiest thing you could possibly look at if you know what to look at. The engram necessary to solve the case is not back on the track. The engram, this is a different thing than a valence, you see. But the engram necessary to solve the case is always sitting right in the chair in front of you. That's the engram necessary to solve the case. Now, whether we can tackle that head on, that's another question. Because can we find it directly? Or are there underlying things? Or there are several layers of these things? Yes, things keep showing up, but you always tackle that which is necessary to resolve the case. and that will change the characteristic of an E-meter or change the manifestation of the PC. E-meter goes up a quarter of a dial and goes pitadaloom, and then drops, and then goes up a quarter of a dial and goes pitadaloom, and drops. And it's been doing this. No matter what you ask him, this is what it did. And you're going down the line, and you say, now how about your Aunt Grace? You mentioned your Aunt Grace a short time ago. And the engram goes, half a dial, rise, and another rise, and another rise. And then all of a sudden, and you say, well, how about your Uncle Oscar? And it does a kind of a rise, and it's faltering, and, well, how about your Uncle Oscar? You recall your Uncle Oscar, so on, yes, I do. And once more, this thing is going up, and it's going fiddity-dum, and fall, you know, and up, and fiddity-dum, and fall, as before. When we change the manifestation of the thing, when we went on to Aunt Grace, we have something that's peculiar. Now, it doesn't matter if we say Uncle Oscar, your grandpa, your grandma, your dog, priest, priestesses, kings, cats, coal heavers, anything else, it goes up. And goes, wa-da-da-da, and falls. Or maybe it falls a little bit more on the others. You get the idea? But every time we say Aunt Grace, it says, see? We got a different reaction. You got it. Audit it. Simple as that. Why did it do this? Well, the thing which is sitting right there is the easiest thing to trigger. It's actually the thing which is obsessively, unchangingly, forever wrong with the PC is the easiest thing to change. Oddly enough, it's the most tenuous. Oh, you won't think so. The PC will cough and spit and writhe and die and cry and moan and turn on emotions and turn them off again and have a dreadful time trying to run Aunt Grace. And, well, I never did a thing to her. That was the whole thing. You know, I never did anything to her. I mean, I never did anything at any time that I ever, asking me to think of something I did. I never did anything to her. I know I was good. I was sweet. I was kind. I was decent. I just give her all my pennies, all my money, and every night and so on. And I just lovely to her, and all she did to me. Now, just think of one thing you did to Aunt Grace. Well, she was just all my life, I was just wonderful to her, just wonderful. I never did a bad thing. Boy, you really got the valence, man. You got it. This guy's bad. That's bad off. He can't think of one single thing he did to this person. Obviously, he must be the person. Now, people talk about characters like this right in PT. You'll hear somebody chattering on madly about some character, right, like this in PT. You could audit that person that he's complaining about. He never did anything to him and so forth. You probably wouldn't have the key button on the case, but it's auditable. Now, it is better to find something that can be run and run it than to simply search forever and hopelessly for something to run that you don't find and don't run. Got the idea? It's better to run something than nothing. Unless it's a pro-survival valence, and I'd leave that alone. Then you're just mostly wasting time or making the PC unhappy. He knows what'll happen. He knows the ravening beast of his reconscious mind will leap forth full-armed and slay everybody. Freud's ideas, by the way, of the unconscious, the censor, that sort of thing, was actually a study of valences. Acceptable repressive valences, newly adopted in order to render null and void bad cause valences, only adopted. And this sandwich, good valence, bad valence, good valence, bad valence, and that sort of thing, all stacked up together, gave him actually the insight of observing that man seemed to have just below the surface a ravening beast. He at least came as close as that, but he said this was man himself, and this was the creature, and that is where he erred and why he didn't solve it. He said that is man. No, that's not man. That is a valence that man mocks up and adopts. Now, as we look over the whole picture of assessment, we cannot overlook the need for judgment, the need for experience, the need for practice. We know the mechanisms. The handiest thing in the world is the valence that we're trying to assess out of the case. It's the nearest thing to us. It is sitting right in the chair, right in front of us. That is what we are trying to find, unravel, and so forth. And many are the by-roads which you will take before you finally get so that you can collide, whomp, every time with the exact valence necessary to resolve the case. Don't try my method until you've had a lot of experience, because it won't be terribly successful. I use a crystal ball myself. Thank you.
Thank you.